I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Okay, let's get right to it. And all I can say is what's happened. What has happened that all of a sudden accusations are the equivalent of being judged guilty? I get it. I feel sorry for people that have been abused. And I'm not going to defend them or accuse them of anything. But we are a nation of the rule of law. I was raised as a young person. I was always taught you're innocent until you're proven guilty. That's the way the law that I have always been taught works. The accusation is not enough. You must be proven guilty. Where has that gone? I watched the TV talk show host yesterday, and only Hannity had the courage to raise that issue. Because if you raised that issue on any other talk show, you got shouted down as being anti-woman or something worse. The Republicans all said the same thing. If it is true, then that person should resign. Four of them was quoted on MSNBC, and they all got criticized. Why would they say something like that? Why would they say, if it is true? Isn't the declaration by these women truth enough? And they challenged these Republicans as all being, you know, racist and anti-women, because they didn't automatically go with the concept that the accusation is stronger than the courts. Have we gone that far? Is our rule of law so weak now that the minute an accusation is leveled, the person is deemed guilty? I like Kevin Spacey, for example. When he was told or was accused by someone of something he did years and years ago, he said, and I believe truthfully, I don't remember that, but if I did that, I apologize. But the distance from him and Netflix and other advertisers that supported him is miles now. Will he ever come back? Maybe in a few years, because not only have we as a nation moved toward the accusation trumps the court verdict, we've also moved toward the situation where America has very, very short memories. It wasn't long ago that Bill Clinton was accused of and convicted of these kinds of activities, but not only did he survive, but he became very wealthy. Nobody left him. Oh, maybe a few people did, but not many. His response, as I recall in court, when asked why he did those things with those interns or an intern, he said, "Because I could." Isn't that the height of arrogance? Yet he can fly anywhere now and get paid $200,000 or $300,000 for a speech. What can Kevin Spacey get? Nothing. So we've moved. I don't know, is it to the left or the right? I guess it's to the left, where the accusation, a declaration of an event, is true. I heard Hannity talk about it, and he had to be very careful for fear that he didn't get labeled anti-feminine or anti-woman or in favor of sexual harassment. But he alone said, look, we are supposedly a nation where you are innocent until proven guilty. So why are all these people becoming convicted by the press and their friends walk away from them before there's even a guilty conviction? Do people lie about things like this? Of course they do. Do people lie for money? Of course they do. Do they lie for political gain? Of course they do. Am I accusing anybody of lying? No, I'm not. I'm simply arguing for the rule of law, for the rule of rationality, and not the mob rule that apparently goes on. Do you know, this morning when I got up, I went to my AP icon on my iPad. Do you know what I went to first? Entertainment. I never go to entertainment. I go to sports, I go to politics, I go to business. This morning I went to entertainment. Why? Because I wanted to see who was being accused of today. And sure enough, there it was. Steven Seagal was being accused by Jenny McCarthy, who I guess was a Playboy model at some time. I can't remember, of sexually harassing her. Steven Seagal. Yes, he was this morning's accusation. Did he do it? And looking at her description of it and the fact that she had reported it early on, I suspect he did do it or something akin to that. And of course, there are different characterizations of events. If you've ever been to court and you've listened to two people describe the same thing, you will know that there are disparately different characterizations of what happened. Is that the case with Steven Seagal? I don't know. But he's been accused, and now I'm curious to see how many people leave him, how many advertisers. Because if the media doesn't blow it up, then nothing happens. So what we have is a combination of an accusation and then the media blowing it up, which creates the negative situation for the person being accused. If the media didn't blow it up, probably nothing would happen. It would go to court and get resolved in a civil court one way or the other. My feeling is that the media is not going to blow up the Steven Seagal accusation. Why? Because the media is fickle. I think they've had enough of accusations. We've had enough of them. And the media needs big targets like senators. Well, Seagal is a big target, but not as big as a senator or a president or something in that level of public awareness or public knowledge, a public figure. If they don't have big public figures to harangue in their papers, then they'll go look for something else. And I know Rachel Maddow found something else yesterday, and all the MSNBC people, they couldn't wait to run all the negative videos about Trump talking about China, one after another. All Rachel Maddow ran were these videos where Trump said, we've been taken advantage by China. China has been raping us economically. And there's, you know, let's face it, a dozen videos of Trump saying those things. And then Rachel Maddow came on and says, and now what do we have it? Trump pandering to the Chinese. What is going on? And goes on to desecrate Trump and call into question his veracity. And I'm here to tell you that I think his comments in China and his comments about China when he was running are totally consistent. He is a competitor. He recognizes that the competition will find your weak spot and exploit it. He may not like it if he's on the losing side, but he admires it because that's what business people do when they compete. China found a weak spot in America's policies, and they exploited it to their advantage. And what did Trump say? Trump says, I admire a leader who makes decisions in favor of their own country. Totally consistent. Chinese premiers made decisions in favor of the Chinese. And by the way, that's what he should do. And Trump only said, I'm going to make decisions in favor of the American people. It's two competitors admiring each other for taking advantage of weaknesses in each country's policies. It's totally consistent in my mind. In every sport I've ever watched, there's been two competitors. I mean, two top competitors. And usually one competitor will say, I'm better because of the other person. The other person made me better. I used to know some examples of that, but usually people get better because they play good competition. And they respect good competition, win or lose. At least the great competitors do. Trump was saying, I respect China. They made decisions for China. That's what they're elected to do or appointed to do. They're not to make decisions in favor of America. They found a weakness in our policies and exploited it. And guess what? Now Chinese is a powerhouse, and we're not to some extent. And Trump was saying, okay, I know you've done this. I don't like it, but I respect you for doing it because you did something for your own country, and I'm here to try and stop it. We need to close these gaps. That's all he was saying. Rachel Maddow says, oh my gosh, he's pandering to the Chinese. Oh my gosh, he's changed his tune. He hasn't changed his tune. You see, it's a personality conflict. It's that people like Maddow, people like MSNBC in general, they don't understand the spirit of competition, which I don't know why, because as children growing up, we are taught competition. Everything we watch is competition. Football. Now, when one of the football coaches exploits one of the weaknesses of the other coaches, that's okay, because that's what one coach is expected to do, to identify the weaknesses in the competition and take advantage of those weaknesses, and vice versa. And at the end, the coaches respect each other. That coach did a better job of identifying my weaknesses than I did, and sure enough, they beat us. Trump says, China did a really good job of identifying the weaknesses of America's policy. Obama and others didn't do anything to close it. China took advantage of it because they are in government to help their own people. And Trump simply said to China, and guess what? I'm now in government to help my own people. So I'm going to try to close some of these things. They're going to admire him because they're competitors. I don't know why that's so hard to understand. For me, the minute I heard it, I understood perfectly because I am a competitor and I know that I can't get better at what I do without good competition. The competitor on the other side makes me better at what I do. Steve Jobs, when he was president of Apple, always took the position that Apple needed a competitor. And I remember one year he simply said, IBM is our competitor. He simply declared that. So his people would have somebody to rally against. Now, they've beat the crap out of IBM a dozen times since then, but the point is that he recognized, like any good leader does, that you need a competitor. In watching the Oliver Stone film, and I may not have this exactly right, but there was one interview with the Russian ambassador after they took the wall down. And the Russian ambassador said something like this. He said, "The wall may be down and you may be happy, but you now have a major, major problem." And the American asked, "What is the problem?" And the Russian ambassador replied, "You lost a good competitor." Everything we do is based on competition. Let's get the Russians. Let's get this country. Let's get that country. Because we need a competitor. It's all part of our whole lifestyle. Show me anything we do that's mainstream America that doesn't have a competitor, that doesn't have competition. That's the foundation of what we do. All right, tax policy. I'm going to reveal the tax policy that I've talked about many, many times. And I don't know anyone who has found a flaw in my tax policy. Now, yesterday, I already talked about the fact that I'd rather spend my money in certain ways that affect the economy and the growth of the United States, rather than have the government spend my money and direct the economy in ways they think is important. Having said that, now we get into the issue of tax reduction. What is the fairest way to reduce taxes? And I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. It's not that complicated. You keep the current tax structure. Why? I'm not saying it's good, but because everyone knows how to fill out the forms now. The accountants know how to fill out the forms. Yes, and some companies pay no taxes. And that's why my tax reduction policy works so well. Everybody simply fills out their taxes like they've done in the past. No change. But when they get to the bottom line and it says their taxes are $5,000, they simply deduct 20%, send the government $4,000. That's it. What about the people that pay no taxes? They don't get a tax reduction. This is the problem in some of the mathematical models we use to compute the average tax reduction, is half the people in the United States pay no taxes, so a tax reduction doesn't help them because they don't pay any taxes in the first place. Same way with corporations. If a corporation has figured out all the loopholes and winds up not paying any taxes, they don't get a tax reduction, do they? See, in my plan, it's pretty clear. If you pay taxes, you get a reduction. If you're hiding your money somewhere else, you don't get any reduction. And by the way, you don't deserve a reduction. Now, what if you're a millionaire or a billionaire and you pay $1 million in taxes? Then you simply pay $800,000 and you can take your $200,000 and do something else with it. So sure, the more you pay, the more you get a reduction on in terms of absolute dollars, but everybody gets the same, 20% across the board. Don't make it more complicated by saying, what if you make $10 million, you only get a 10% reduction? No, the more you pay, the more reduction in total dollars you should get. Very simple. It's a one-line tax plan. Figure out how much you owe, compute your taxes, deduct 20%, and send 80% to the government. Tax plan over and done with. And it works because if you're not paying any taxes, you don't get a reduction. If you're a corporation, I heard one time that IBM in California never paid any state taxes because they had so many deductions. They don't get a tax break then, do they? If their tax form says zero money due, they don't get a tax reduction. See, companies that don't pay taxes now, they're busy lobbying this tax policy to get even a better break on taxes. See, mine's quite simple. Leave the plans the way they are. If a person pays $500 in taxes, they send $400 and keep $100. And if you're paying $500 and you get $100 back, that's a lot of money to you. Now, my tax plan is infallible. It's defensible. It's indisputably fair. The more you pay, the bigger reduction you get. Think about it. I don't believe there's a single person out there that could argue against that tax plan. Oh, you may call it progressive because the person who makes $1 million gets the same 20% tax break as somebody makes $500,000. And I really should express that in terms of actual taxes, because if you make $1 million, don't pay any taxes, you don't get a tax break. It's only if you pay taxes do you get a tax break. How long would it take to pass that? Probably never, because it's too simple. It makes too much sense, and it's too easy to implement. Right now, I heard that the latest tax plan, the tax policy, the tax simplification plan, is now over 1,000 pages long. You CPAs out there, you accountants, you've done it again. There's no such thing as tax simplification when you have tax lawyers and senators working on it and corporations lobbying for it. My tax simplification plan, anyone can understand. It's not cut the corporate taxes here, cut the corporate taxes there. It's just, if you pay taxes, you pay less, period. End of story. Oh, what about bringing money home? If they bring it home, it's the same thing. Whatever tax base they were on before, they now get a 20% break. It's just that simple. Whatever taxes you pay now, when you get to the bottom line, you take 20% off. There's a lot of people that don't pay very much taxes. They won't get a very big tax break. And why should they? They're not paying very much taxes. And the ones that pay none don't get any tax break. You need to really think about it. And don't discount the elegance of simplicity as being inappropriate or too simple to be reasonable. The Ten Commandments to me are pretty simple, but they all make sense. Simplicity is not void of complexity. It trumps complexity because it's easy to understand. It's easy to communicate things with. I do expert witness work. I look at patents and other types of technology issues and write reports on those issues. And I can tell you that the simplicity of the argument almost always is superior to an argument that slices and dices and parses words. Because simplistic arguments or simple arguments are easier to understand by the recipient. That's part of any issue, particularly in the technology area, to understand what's being communicated. Yesterday, I had someone tell me how fast technology changes. It's rapidly changing all the time. All sorts of new products. I asked the person, did they own a computer? They said, yes. I said, what do you do on your computer? He said, well, I write. And I said, what program do you use? They said, Microsoft Word. In other words, after 35 years of computers, the most popular program is still Microsoft Word. Now, I believe there have been a lot of features and a lot of changes made, but it still does pretty much the same thing. We key in words. It puts them into paragraphs. Oh, we can spell check and make them bold and things like that. But still fundamentally a word processing program that most people still use. So has technology changed that much? If Microsoft Word is still being sold after 40 years and is the cash cow that drives Microsoft's other products? Yes, we have Excel and we have PowerPoint. that Microsoft Word is the moneymaker. Computers still have one main thing they do. They are word processors. That's not a particularly new concept. Now, you may not like that example, but my point is that technology really doesn't change as fast as we all think it does. The internet was developed somewhere in the 70s and didn't receive any kind of acclaim till 1995 with the introduction of the World Wide Web. But the internet had been around long before that. And it's still around, by the way, but we use the World Wide Web, and most of us don't even recognize that the internet exists outside the World Wide Web. The World Wide Web is a subset. Yeah, I know I got off the subject a bit there in terms of tax policies, but my main argument is that simple ideas are successful because they can be communicated to other people. Make America great again. That resonates. And while I'm saying that, think about anything, any phrase that the Democrats used that still resonates. I can't think of one. Because they didn't have one? No, they had several. But it didn't resonate with the American people. Now that's all I have to say today on tax policy, on the issue of you're innocent until proven guilty. So, have a good listen. Listen in tomorrow when I'll be talking a bit more about the tax policies and making fun of MSNBC as they make fun of Trump because they don't understand competition. They don't understand personality differences. They really don't understand what Trump says. They just see everything he says as being different than he said before. I don't. Oh, there are some exceptions, but generally I see him being, yes, almost perfectly consistent. He's a competitor. Maybe you don't understand him because you're not a competitor. That's all for today. Bob Sherwood at Web Talk with Bob signing off on this November the 10th, 2017, saying have a great Friday. Listen again tomorrow for some important words that you won't hear on other radio shows or other TV stations because this is coming from the heart, land of America, where conservatives still live. Goodbye and good listening. I brought to you courtesy of